And a very fine evening to everybody out there in podcast land. And I thought I'd intro the show with something a little bit different there. It's not that I don't like the Crimson Twins, because I adore them, as everybody knows, and they're good friends of mine. But I am kind of interested in mixing up the music a little bit and having different things. Now, obviously, I can't use copyrighted material for more than like 15-second clips. But 15 seconds, to me, is enough to intro a show. So, you know, hey, why not? So that was the Sisters of Mercy there. The name of the song is We Are the Same Suzanne. It's not on any of their albums. It's a track that they released on the internet. And there are videos of it available on YouTube as well. Very good song. And it's probably the last good song that I've actually heard out of the Sisters. I love the Sisters of Mercy. They, of course, that's kind of an old school goth band. Although the Sisters would not actually admit to being a goth band. They don't like that term. They don't like to be put into that category. Anyhow, a little something different for you to open the show today. Welcome to episode number 38 of Tom Harris USA. This is Tom Harris in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, and I have an action-packed episode for you this week. Lots going on. Well, you know, when I say action-packed, you know it is kind of relative, right? It's as action-packed as this show ever gets, which is to say it's not very action-packed at all. But there is a lot going on this week, so I will just kind of get right to it. For those of you who may remember, quite some time ago now, I recorded a show about psychic predictions. And in the course of doing that episode on psychic predictions, I made 10 psychic predictions. Well, I'm very pleased to say that prophecy has been fulfilled once again on this program. I made 10 predictions. My 11th prediction is that I'm going to get 7 predictions right by the end of 2010. Well, last week, a prediction came true, which now increases my tally to 4 psychic predictions that have come correct. And, I mean, it's kind of a tragic one, but I did predict that an actor who was involved in the Star Trek TV series would pass away. And technically, that did happen. The comedian Henry Gibson, who was better known, perhaps, from Laugh-In, from 1969, 1970, and that about that time, appeared as a adversary on Star Trek Deep Space Nine in 1999. So, well, technically that makes the prediction has come true. Now, as everybody knows, I don't believe in psychic abilities. I don't think anybody can tell the future. I don't think anybody has any insight. So I'm going to be Weasley, and I'm going to be like the TV psychics are, and sit and call that a hit. Now, would I consider that a hit, really? Well, technically, yes. But in reality, no, because that's not what really you think of when you think, well, Star Trek actor. You don't think Henry Gibson. But, you know, I still have till the end of 2010, and if, you know, somebody who is a little bit more prominent in the franchise should kick it, then at least I can say, well, that's that. But, you know, this is the way that psychics work, and this is how they say their predictions are. You know, that they'll say something that disconnected from what they actually predicted, even more so, actually. Now, the fact that I have 4 predictions right now out of 10, I mean, that is a track record far above and beyond any of the popular psychics out there. While I was researching the psychic prediction show, I found that the popular TV psychics had a track record of something like they could claim maybe 1 or 2 hits per year. And I've doubled that. So it just goes to show, you know, like, and that was my point when I did the original episode also, is that if you have a broad enough prediction and are willing to accept a broad enough result, you're going to get a lot more. And also it has to do with, you know, being educated and knowing what certain trends are, and they predict along the line of trends that they hear about in the media, but the media is not always right. In fact, the media is quite often wrong about trends. So the predictions tend to be uneven at best. So pretty interesting stuff there. Now, the next thing that I have to mention to you all is that just the other day, I was given my notice. So what does that mean? Well, it means that I am probably going to be losing my job in the very near future. The target date that they have for my last day is October 3rd, which is a Friday. Could be the 2nd. I'm not sure. I'm not looking at a calendar, folks. So I guess technically I'm being let go a week from Friday this week. So boo-hoo. You know, I've been talking about this situation now probably almost ever since I started doing the show. I know I mentioned on the show several times. I'm not too worried at this point about finding a replacement job. And I've mentioned this before in the show, and I'll mention it again. I have a very positive outlook about finding other work. And it's because that I've never had to spend more than 2 months finding work. What really, really helps is having a skill, having a trade to fall back on. Now, back years ago, I mean, I was in the printing industry, and I was in that business for about 14 and a half years. Now, I'm not going to be looking for work in the printing industry because it's a business that I got out of. And during the time I was with The Savvy Traveler, and you can go visit their website at www.thesavvytraveler.com, and I was managing the store there, I actually picked up these bookkeeping skills, and I was the bookkeeper for that business and the sister business. So I had some, you know, good 4 years of experience doing bookkeeping before I got the job that I have now. Now, I've been doing financial stuff ever since, and there always is a market for financial services. So, I mean, that is something that I kind of am happy about, because one of the things about job hunting is the more diverse your skills are, the more likely it is that you're going to be able to find something. You know, so when I'm talking to people who are actually looking for work, I often say, well, you know, maybe you should take a class. Maybe you should learn how to do some sort of job that's different from what you know now, because you never know. You know, you might be able to find something that's, you know, right up your alley right away. But in the meantime, you can temp. And financial temping is a big deal, at least in Chicago. But Chicago is a big city, too, so that does make a difference as well. But I would think that there would be opportunities in places that have a lot of industrial parks and that sort of thing, too. So I guess you kind of never know where you're going to find it. I mean, they're always looking for people to come in while, you know, cover pregnancy leaves and vacations and things for people who do data entry to do, you know, sort of basic bookkeeping. So it is a good idea. And, I, you know, if you can go to a local community college and take a few accounting classes or, you know, sort of, you know, learn to use QuickBooks on your own, it can be a very good opportunity for you. And I got into it kind of accidentally, because when I was working at the Savvy Traveler, I was one of the people who actually was on the sales floor, helping customers and so forth. And then our bookkeeper left, and knowing my bosses, I knew that they weren't going to want to pay somebody a lot of money to come and be the bookkeeper. And I offered myself up and said, well, if you're willing to teach me how to do this job, or the person who was leaving to train me to do this job, I'll do it. You know, I want a little bit more money, but not, you know, not so much more that it would be prohibitively expensive. And that's how I actually got started doing it. It was sort of almost by accident, and just seizing an opportunity that I saw presenting itself. So, you know, I know there are people out there listening who have been having trouble finding work, and maybe the answer is to learn a new skill. You know, so that's I guess would be my advice. So I always do have printing to fall back on if necessary. The problem with that, though, being in Chicago, is that the printing plants and so forth are out of town, and that they would require a car and you know, or an overly long commute. It would be that sort of a situation that I avoided at the present job. So anyway, looks like October 3rd I will be out of work. But we never know, because what has happened is in the past, when they were letting go other employees, they would give them notice and say, okay, well, next Friday is going to be your last day. And then at some point during the following week, they would say, well, we'd like you to stay another week, or and that would go on and on. We had one employee, she was let go in November. I want to say, you know, the first week of November. It was early in the month. But her actual last day of work was sometime in March. I don't know if that's going to happen this time, because, you know, you never know about these things. So anyway, my my upcoming unemployment is closer than ever. And, you know, of course I'm concerned, you know, but I am ready to go. My resume is updated. I have in the past used various sites to get my resume out there, like Monster and a few others. And I've also done interviews and so forth with various agencies. The last time I did a job hunt, which was in 2007, and all of these people have contacted me periodically just to see if I'm still looking or looking again and so forth. So the first thing I'm going to do on my first day of unemployment is to go down and file paperwork for unemployment, because I've never actually claimed unemployment. And it's one of those things that you pay into. So it actually is my money. And at least I have that coming to me, because I've never claimed on it before. And then the second thing I'll do is go and reactivate all my accounts at all the various agencies. So I'm optimistic. You know, I've probably alluded to it on the show, and I may have even talked about it a little bit. The company that I work for is not in a particularly healthy situation. And I have to say it's not entirely the economy. I think that there were some extenuating circumstances, business decisions that were made that have caused the company to have fallen upon hard times. But the economy played a large factor in that, because we operate high-end restaurants, and if nobody has any money, they're not going to eat out at high-end restaurants, obviously. In other job news, and I don't know whether I mentioned this before, but Pete got a job, and I had mentioned that he had been looking, and he actually did find a job, and it's a pretty good one. It's not a lot of money, though, but it is a fantastic opportunity for him, because he just is graduated from culinary school back in March, and I know I talked about that before, and was looking for something of an entry-level type job, but the job he got is actually better than that, and so I'm very proud of him, and so far it seems to be going all right. But it is a situation where he's been called in to help save a business that is not doing well. And the owner has kind of driven it into the ground over the past few years. And so that's something that is going to be, you know, an ongoing project for him. And, of course, it's going to be very stressful. But for a first job, that's quite good. And hopefully he'll be able to get a quick promotion there. I have a feeling they're going to be looking to turn over some staff and hopefully get this establishment where he's working up to snuff and actually starting to pick up on business instead of losing business. And it's not the same kind of situation where I'm in the corporate office and they're actually eliminating the corporate office altogether. So good for him. And I'm very proud of Pete and what he has been doing. And the approach that he's had to solving problems at work has been very, very nice. And so good, you know, and I'm really happy to be able to share that he has a job now. The other day, also, and I mentioned this last time, I had my interview with Joe Morris from American Talk USA. Looks like I'll be on his show sometime in the next couple of weeks. It was a lot of fun. we chatted just about podcasting, about my show, this and that. Originally, we were going to talk about the vacation, but I guess he decided that I had talked about the vacation a lot on this show, and he was, you know, wants to send people actually to listen to my show, which is fine with me. I mean, I'm certainly happy to have as many listeners as possible. I do want to give a little shout out to the people over at Atheist Nexus. I have been hanging out a little bit there in the chat area, kind of communicating a little bit with the people in there. Not trying to weasel around, though. I'm not trying to, like, plug the show every chance I get there, because the discussion is very interesting. If you are a atheist, agnostic type, rationalist type, Atheist Nexus, I think it's atheistnexus.org. I'm not quite sure about that now. They do have a chat area. Now, I guess, you know, they're very sensitive over there, because being an atheist site, they want to actually be able to let their hair down and not be challenged constantly and not constantly have to defend their atheism. And they do have a no theist rule. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's, you can't join and you can't log on, but it's not a place to argue about religion or God or the lack thereof. It's not that kind of a place. But it has happened a couple of times just in the last couple of weeks that I've been a member of that site, that people do come in to the chat area and start trying to convert the heathens. And it really is very interesting. You know, it's a very civil bunch as a rule. It's a very thoughtful group of people. But it is funny that, you know, there are a few who do get rather irritated when, you know, people come in. It's always, you know, evangelical Christians who come in and try to convert the heathens in the atheist chat room. And they get, and, you know, some of the people get a little bit nasty. It was interesting, though, because we had a young person come in the other day and was asking questions, and a couple of the people were being really, really snarky. And, you know, it's, now obviously it's the internet, you really can't tell how old people are, but judging from the use of language and the kind of the level of critical thinking that was being displayed, I got the idea that this person was actually, you know, in their mid-teens to early teens, so quite young. And they were spouting sort of, you know, Christian apologetics and just obviously things that they had heard from other people and not anything that they'd actually given thought to, because the person was not able to answer questions. You know, they weren't able to answer any kind of analytical question. They just kind of repeated their question over and over again and ignored anything that they were told. And that is irritating, I have to admit. But I'm of the mind, and I've said before on the show, I'm not afraid of having a dialogue about religion, about the existence of God, about evolution, about any of that stuff. I'm not afraid of that. In fact, I like that. And if you are one of those people who has questions about atheism, has questions about rational thinking, that sort of thing, I want to encourage you to contact me. And of course, anybody can write to the show. And I love getting mail from people. I encourage it, as a matter of fact. And if you do want to email the show, the email address is tom@tomharrisusa.com. Always happy to hear from people. And I do have actually an email here from LG, Leanne, who often appears on American Talk USA, which I mentioned earlier. And she was commenting on my previous episode. I was talking a little bit about politics. And LG had this to say. I'm going to read her email in its entirety, and then I'll go back and comment on pertinent bits. Or perhaps the impertinent bits. Oh, Leanne's not impertinent. What are you insinuating? Leanne writes, "You may need to make transcripts available. I could carry it with me and whip it out whenever I was feeling a little conservative-whelmed. Your political segment should be shared with the whole country. It means a lot to me to be able to listen to someone who thinks much as I do about the situation, especially living here in the middle of so many of the misinformed. Thank you so much. As a younger person, I used to think of myself as relatively conservative. I mean, I dressed conservatively and spent conservatively. But then things changed, and I saw that the only thing they were really interested in was that I applied my wits conservatively and made decisions totally based on fears, half-truths, and actual lies to the benefit of corporate coffers. I refused to be used. Could be that I'm a bit naive, but Obama's health care plan hits me totally differently than most of the folks around here, too. I don't see it as the government controlling us, but instead it seems that it would set us free. Controlled is what we are now. Am I wrong? Joys and thanks, Leanne. Well, first of all, Leanne, thanks so much for this email. It's a really good email. As far as transcripts, no, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think I want to sit there and copy down all my words. It would take so much work, but it's a good idea anyway. I understand feeling conservative whelmed, and I suppose the problem is much worse where you are, because you live in the South and that's a more conservative area. Now, I live in Illinois, which is the bluest of blue states, so I don't have that problem so much here. And also, it depends on the company you keep. I tend to be more moderate middle, and on social issues, I lean to the left or libertarian, depending on the issues. And I do agree, and even in blue Illinois, there are a lot of misinformed people. Now, the problem, of course, is that the misinformed people are getting whipped up into a frenzy, and they're not being told the truth. Now, the people who are whipping them up, well, we know who they are. It's the corporate interests, and you allude to that in your second paragraph. The corporate interests don't want health care reform because they stand to lose a lot of money. What they need to understand, though, is that the health care system is so screwed up that they really need to be reformed. Now, I see people on the right saying, well, the health care system is a mess. It needs reform. But they want to reform it in a way that allows the insurance companies to make even more money, because they see the solution as being a privatization of everything and getting the government out of healthcare entirely. You do occasionally hear conservative politicians talking about undoing the New Deal, you know, getting rid of Social Security. Now, that's sort of a touchy subject, because it's an idea that conservatives love on paper, but they don't actually campaign on that idea, because Social Security and Medicare, let's face it, are programs that work, and they're very popular. So it is a complex situation, and unfortunately, the corporations have become very good at doing this. They get these ideas out there and to protest these things, which, you know, these things are in the best interest of the population in general. They can't beat people on substance. The corporations can't go to the populace and say, well, we're against this because we want to make more money, and we want to continue making billions of dollars in profits. So they have to use buzzwords like socialized medicine, which Obama's plan isn't, and get people worked up that way. They have become very skilled at convincing people to vote against their own interests. And it's really, really funny. I mean, it's not funny, ha-ha funny, because it's tragic. But also, you know, watching the people, it's not just healthcare either. You watch the people from the Tea Party movement who they interview, and they're just saying these things that are just completely ignorant. They have no idea what the issues really are. They just know that you know, Glenn Beck or whoever said that they should go and protest. And it's the same with the people who are going to the town hall meetings and causing disruptions. It's not that they have ideas that they can implement to make the situation better. They don't want the dialogue at all. And they would want to shout anyone down. What's really interesting, though, when you talk about the tea parties, which I think I probably talked about a little bit before, is that look at these people. look at these people who are protesting. You know, they're protesting Obama's policy to make the corporations reform their practices and provide better care. And these people don't look like they're, you know, making more than $200,000 a year. You look at these people, they look like working class people. They look like, you know, farmers and factory workers and you know, people who aren't on the top scale. And they're complaining about too many taxes and so forth. And I don't know if are they paying attention? You know, I don't know about them. But in March, I got a tax cut. The Obama tax cut for the middle class. I actually take home like $50 more per paycheck than I did last year. And anybody who was making less than $200,000 a year got a tax cut. But these people are complaining because they think that the taxes on 1% of the population are going to get raised. It's silly. It's absolutely silly, and they're being manipulated into this by certain sections of the media. And I think we all know, when if we're paying attention to the issues, what sections of the media that is. Now, it is like a pendulum. The party that's in power, when you have more conservative politicians in power, you get the rhetoric from the left people. When the left is in power, you get the rhetoric from people on the right. What's really frightening, though, of course, is that you look at the rhetoric that were coming through, you know, during the Bush years, and you don't hear these threats of violence, and you don't hear this nastiness, and you don't hear the racism coming through the way you do right now. And, you know, that part of that is the natural, the line, you know, the political line between those who identify themselves as conservative and those who identify themselves as liberal. Now, I'm right in the middle. And part of that is because I grew up in a very conservative family. My mother's family, they're all, not all, but of my grandparents' generation and also my parents' generation, the vast majority of them are Republican-leaning people. There's a few who are not, but most of them are. And I have an aunt and uncle who are, they're big, you know, Republican. They're not activists, but they do go to these Tea Party protests. They do go to these things. And they're, you know, somewhat active in that. You know, love them to death, and we get along, you know, just fine. We don't have any major disagreements over politics. But, you know, that's because I was raised in a more conservative environment, and my political leanings tend to be more moderate and socially libertarian. I don't mean libertarian with a capital L. I mean libertarian with a small L, just in case people start thinking I'm one of those libertarians because I can't stand them. But I used to be even more conservative when I was younger, and as I've gotten older, yeah, you know, I do kind of think that went along with the religion a bit. You know, because I was very conservative when I was a Christian and was very careful about language and not swear. I swear like a sailor now, but not so much on the show because I don't want this to be an explicit show. I don't want to have to limit it too much. But I do speak like I would at work. So, yeah, I do hear you. All I can say is that, you know, when you're feeling overwhelmed by people who are promoting these lies, that they should be confronted, and in a nice way. I think that you're going to get a lot better results if you are respectful and address the substance of what they're saying. Because if they're saying, well, Obamacare is socialist, and, you know, it's going to turn us into a communist country, we're going to be just like Stalinist Russia because Obama is like Hitler, you know, you know, all the really extreme rhetoric that we're seeing right now, they should be challenged. And you should say, well, what exactly about Obama's healthcare plan is socialist? And actually confront them on the facts and make them tell you. Yeah, because I have a feeling most of these people don't even know. It is just, that's the problem right now. I say it all the time. I'll say it again. Yeah, that's the way it is. Anyhow, I'm running out of time. So thank you again, Leanne, for your very kind email. I look forward to hearing from you again in the future. And I'm going to go ahead and sign off for now. This is Tom Harris at Tom Harris USA. I'll see you next time.